welcome to On the Brink Radio. This is Jeff Phillips Wefferson. I'm really pleased to have Norwegian musician Erik Wallo with me this evening, coming to us from southern Norway. And so, Erik, how the heck are you?
I'm fine.
I have first heard of you and your music on a radio show called Music from the Hearts of Space. And I'm guessing that you've probably appeared, your music has probably been on hundreds of their shows.
Yes. Pretty often, yes.
Yes. Well, look, tell us a bit about yourself. You're Norwegian, and are you primarily a guitarist?
Yes, I started as a guitar player, and gradually I started to work with the electronic instrument as well, yeah. Hmm.
And so I can see quite a few guitars behind you there. That looks like a blend of acoustic and electric guitars.
Yeah, I have a bunch of guitars, big and small electric guitar synthesizers, and just let's stand here ready to go.
Yes. Well, so now, did you study music formally?
I started in the early 80s, but I quit. I got too much work to do, too much touring, and so it was all a mess. So I chose just to do the touring and work as a musician.
Yes.
I have a lot of teachers that I have got advices, and
Well,
private lessons.
Yes. Who are some of your main influences, like musicians or guitarists that you like to listen to when you were younger? Who are some of your primary influences?
Well, of course, David Gilmour has been a huge influence all the time. There are many. All from John McLaughlin to Ralph Towner to Robert Fripp. Many.
Yes, that is cool. I mentioned before, Ralph Towner is probably my very favorite musician of human beings. And I got to meet him a few times. And and last year I was able to give hand-painted rocks to all the members of Oregon through their management firm. I had met him several times before, but one of my very favorite albums was actually recorded there in Oslo on the winter solstice of 1976, and it was Ralph Towner's album called Solstice. That had Jan Garbarek, Eberhard Weber, and John Christensen. And to me, that's one of the coolest, the spirit of that album. It's so cosmic and beautiful. The fact that it was recorded in Norway always was very interesting. And see, when I listen to your music, I've heard not a lot of your music, but a good bit of it. And there's something about the energy of your music that makes me think of Norway, even though I've never been there before. It's got sort of, I don't know, it's not exactly, it's kind of ethereal. It's not quite what you call spacey, but it is. Some of your stuff reminds me kind of like of early Tangerine Dream. You know, and I see that you've worked with Steve Roach, and he was kind of a synthesizer pioneer who's done all kind of stuff. And I think that there's the very favorite track of yours that of which I'm familiar. I think it's called Red Guitars. I love that. I love that track because it's sort of equal part electric guitar. Well, it sounds like it might have electric and acoustic guitar and synthesizer, but it's got kind of a lot of your music has kind of a repeating mandalic, kind of a pulsing kind of rhythm to it. And it makes me think of a guy, a very influential what you might call a minimalist composer who came out with an album called Music for 18 Musicians. His name is Steve Reich. And he was on the ECM. And so a lot of your music makes me think of Music for 18 Musicians, even though that was purely acoustic. So yours is kind of like Pink Floyd Tangerine Dream crossed with Steve Reich. And with some, you know, it's a really interesting thing that you do. And so would you say that you've moved away from guitar? Or are you using the guitar to trigger synthesizers? I'm just trying to guess at how you create some of your more recent stuff.
I try to mix all the time, but a lot of the sounds you hear are created and played on guitar synthesizers, and then I want to. Sometimes I add pure acoustic guitars, and sometimes I mic them in a certain way that is kind of a hybrid, you know. And so it's all that I want to have some organic sounds as well, together with the electronic sounds.
Yes.
I try to have no rules. I try to start from scratch each time. So
yes.
Sometimes it can just be a loop from a synth and start from there, or. Yeah.
Yes. Well, your most recent music, was it recorded? Now, if you were going to perform live, would it be able to sound the same?
Yeah, but live I actually play more guitar than on my albums.
Yes.
Yeah. That's so. It's more improvised.
Yes.
My live shows.
Do you play alone?
Guitar playing. So it's more guitar than on my albums.
Yes. Do you play alone live, or do you have other musicians?
Sometimes, yeah. I played 3 or 4 years ago with Ian Boddy from UK, England. We had a duo. Sometimes I can have... actually, this autumn I'm going to have a quartet. I'm gonna play on the festival here in Norway.
Yes, I saw that.
But mostly I'm doing solo shows. So. Mm.
Do you ever play with a drummer?
Yeah. Mm. So, sometimes or percussion players. So this autumn in August I'm gonna play with a drummer.
Yes.
With big drum set.
Ah, very cool. Well, now, of your CDs, I think you've got at least 15 or 20. Do any of these recordings have you playing with a drummer?
A drummer? Yes. Sometimes I invite musicians into my studio and we do recording, and then I make loops of it.
Yes.
And percussion things. Yeah.
Well, of your existing music, like on your CDs that you have, do any tracks have the drummer?
Yes.
What would that be? What would one of those track? What CD and what track?
Oh, there are so many. Let me think.
I mean, I'm sorry, I don't know all of your music, and so I'm just trying to find what to go to. That's okay, don't worry too much about it.
Let me see. Yeah, sure. There are many. I can't remember. There are always 2 or 3 tracks with drummers. I use either loops or they come and play.
Mm. Okay.
Yes.
Well, have you heard of a guitar player who he recorded on the ECM label, and he's from Scandinavia. I'm not sure if he's Norwegian, and I may not be able to pronounce his name, but it looks like Terje Ripdal.
Yeah, he's Norwegian.
So do you know him?
I met him many years ago.
Is he still playing? Still playing?
Yeah, he's getting older now, but. Still playing, not so often, but I think he's Well, his best era was in the 70s.
So yes.
Of course. So he made a huge influence on me when I was a teenager, you know.
Yes.
So it was kind of inspiring for us younger musicians in Norway that we had such great musicians here in Norway that we got influenced from, you know.
Yes, that is very interesting. So who would be some of the other guitarists in Scandinavia that are playing music similar to what you're doing?
Guitar players.
Yeah, anybody that sort of might play the same kind of.
I can't think of any others in my stuff, actually.
Well, now let me ask you this: I've never been to Norway. Is it possible to drive? Is there a bridge across the ocean from Norway to Germany?
Germany? No, it's you have to go through to Denmark and Sweden, and so that's easy.
But you can drive. You can drive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And how long would it take to get from your house to Berlin?
To Berlin?
Yeah.
By car?
Yeah.
It's maybe 12 hours or something.
So a couple of days.
Yeah, it's a bit.
Yeah.
So but, it's 1 hour by plane, so.
Yes. But you probably, do you go down into the mainland of Europe a lot to perform?
Yeah, sometimes. So I've been playing a lot in Europe. Like last year, I played in Belgium on the festival.
Yes.
Yes. So that's very convenient. You know, it's inside Europe. It's very short distances with plane.
Yes. Well, have you toured or played in the United States very much?
In U.S.?
Yes.
Yes, oh, yeah, many times. So I used to go there once a year for many years, playing festivals.
Yes. Mm. Did you ever meet Stephen Hill from the Hearts of Space?
No, I met his assistant once in California, yeah.
Okay.
There are two people running the station.
Yes. Okay, well, so now tell us what you're working on now. Are you recording any new music or other projects, and you're getting ready to do your live performance there in Norway in August, I think it is.
Yeah.
And so,
I'm happy with that.
Yes.
So, but I'm working on a new app also.
Yes. Is it close to being finished?
I think it's gonna be. I'm gonna use some time on it, so maybe I'm finished with that in November. Maybe it's gonna be released in spring next year.
That'll be cool. So, Well, I wanted to ask you about your recording with Peter Phippen, the flute player.
Oh, yeah.
And Brian Metcalf. Now, who exactly is he?
Oh, he's a drummer. He's a great musician. He has a really interesting story, his career. He's from Arizona and started out as a country music drummer, and he was a session musician in Nashville for many years. Played with all big country artists like Kenny Rogers, and then he gradually switched to more percussion and wanted to do more ambient music. So now he lives in Prescott and releases his own albums, many great albums. And so I had I have been working with him on 4 albums, I think.
Okay.
That's... Yeah, he has quite a story. he has met all the big stars over there, from Jimi Hendrix to Elvis. He should write a book.
Yes, maybe he will. I know that I've spent a little time in Nashville. There is a huge music scene there. There's some other music that made me think of you, that your music reminded me of. There was this guy named Andy Summers. He was the guitar player for The Police. And he did some solo stuff.
Yeah.
And he's got one called, it's called The Wire. It's got the word wire in the title of this. I think it's his first or second solo CD. But some of that's pretty cool. Some of the spacey stuff. And I think he did one or two CDs with Robert Fripp.
Yes.
And so have you recorded with Robert Fripp?
No. I haven't. I know some musicians that knows him. So, no, I should look. That he's one of my heroes.
Yeah. Well, if you go back to the early King Crimson, that was really
I saw King Crimson in Oslo last year.
For real?
Yeah.
Well, don't they? They have three drummers now, right?
Yeah.
And
nice.
who's the guy playing the Chapman stick? The bass is that same Tony Levin, is he still with them?
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Now, have you ever heard of an English band called Osric Tentacles?
I just heard a name. I don't.
It's a band from England. They're called Osric. It's Ozric. Osric Tentacles, like the tentacle on an octopus. Osric Tentacles. You might like some of their stuff. It's kind of I call it hippie metal space fusion. It's sort of like if you took some of your stuff and put kind of a rock, like a progressive rock beat to it. It's kind of like that. But when listening to your stuff, it made me think of early Tangerine Dream. You know, and some of their stuff, like to me, one of my very favorite recordings of theirs is one called Rubicon. It's only, I think it's about their second or third CD, but it's when they really started coming in with the sort of dun 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 dun, you know, the sequencing and those old, I guess it was probably an ARP, those ARP arpeggiators and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, so do you have a Stratocaster?
Yeah, many.
For real, what years are they?
What
years are they from?
Mostly 80s and 90s.
Okay, and are you using the pickups that they came with?
Yes, and some of them are modified, and also I have synthesizer pickups on them. So I'm originally I'm a Les Paul guitarist.
Is that your favorite one, Les Paul?
I find the Strat more easy to adapt into an electronic soundscape, so I tend to use the Strats a lot.
Yes.
Because the Les Pauls, they tend to be not so easy to adapt into electronic music, I think. So it's something with the Stratocaster. It's magic. It fits all types of music.
Very strange. I know that the body of an electric guitar isn't all that important, but are the Strats all made of the same? Is the body wood, or is the body made of wood, or is it like carbon fiber or something?
Always made of wood. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, different kind of wood. Yeah.
Well, tell me about your acoustic guitars.
About what?
About your acoustic guitars.
I have many different sizes, from soprano It's a mixture of nylon and steel string guitars. So I have quite a collection. I have a 10 string special built for me, the 10 string classical guitar, and so what you hear on red guitars, for instance,
yes.
There are layers of many different guitars.
How many different ones?
I don't remember, but it's I have different sizes, and I tune them. The smallest guitars, I tune them very high, like in A or up, to get different flavors.
So you might. So you are you
layering for layering all the guitars.
So are you saying that you in the same song, you might use one guitar in one tuning, and another guitar in another tuning. On the same song.
I try to use different guitars in the same song to create a nice layer.
Yes.
Of sounds.
Yes, and you're very good at that. Well, look, let me ask you this: could you possibly plug in a guitar now and play something for us on the show, like right now? Just make it up off the top of your head. Do something in honor of David Gilmour.
Like this one. This is a Swiss made guitar.
That sounds lovely. Well, what can you plug in? Can you plug in an electric guitar?
I don't have my amps here right now.
Okay.
It would be complicated.
Well, that's all right.
So I have that's downstairs. I have a rehearsal room downstairs.
Okay.
Well,
look, have you ever done the soundtrack to a movie?
Yes, sure, yes. And my music is actually used a lot in films, especially documentary films.
Yes, it lends itself to that. So do you do stuff for Norwegian television?
Oh, yeah, a lot. I used to do it, and now I used to, that was my main living for many years. The last years now I have gradually stopped doing that because I want to make albums instead.
Yes.
But my music is used all the time.
Yes, it's very good. It makes me think of space. Like I found one of your CDs that I think... It was called Arctic something, or it was you and another guy, and it had the word Arctic in the title or something. But there was a track on there called Pulsar.
Oh yeah,
and I really like that was it made me think of a space documentary or a science fiction film or something. My background is in science. And I was originally going to be an astronomer when I was in college. And in 1992, I was in California, and I was involved in some communication research with dolphins using music as a form of communication with whales and dolphins. And I got in touch with the, back then there was this department of NASA that was called SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. And they were using these radio telescopes to listen for signals from outer space. And so I got to meet some of those people, and that was quite cool. And at one point, they were talking with me about doing the music for a documentary about the SETI work, but it all kind of got lost in all the complexities and stuff like that. But what you do would be perfect for something like that.
Yeah. I have a track called Satellite. That would fit.
Yes. Well, look. Now, let me ask you this: do you, what do you do when you're not playing music?
I try to be hiking and such. I live on an island south of Oslo, in the southern part of Norway. But this is not where I was growing up. I grew up in the mountains in the middle of south Norway. So I have a cabin there. I go there often. I have a studio also there. So I go there and work a lot.
That must be fantastic. I've always...
I drive up there once a month and stay there for a week and compose.
I
go skiing and fishing and that, yeah.
That must be fantastic. I've always wanted to visit. When I was in Europe in 2008, I almost came up to Norway. I had a partner from Belgium at the time, and so I decided to travel with her around Germany and stuff. But I've always wanted to go and visit the fjords.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so are you close to the fjords?
Yeah, that mountain village, it's about a 1 hour drive across the mountain, and then you're in the fjords.
Yes, it must be amazingly beautiful. Now, let me ask you this. How many times have you seen the Aurora Borealis? Thousands of times?
Many times. Especially during cold winter nights, you see it here.
Yes.
But it's... if you want to see the real great... sceneries, you have to go to northern Norway.
Yes.
Yeah.
North of the Arctic Circle?
Yeah.
Does the intensity of the display vary from year to year?
It seems like it's something with the weather also, and it has to be, you have to see the stars, it has no clouds, you know,
Okay, well, now let me ask you this. I've heard people say that sometimes the aurora makes a sound that you can hear.
I also heard about that.
Have you heard that sound?
No. I think you have to have special equipment to... I read about it. Some have done some research on it.
Yes.
I think it's very high frequency sounds.
Yes.
That somebody recorded, but it's not loud.
It's not audible to the normal ear. Wouldn't be able to hear it.
No. I don't think you can, but in a starry night, when it's no wind, it has to be very quiet. There are special sounds from the nature itself. When it's really cold and the snow is there, and so you maybe mix it with that sound, you know, from the nature itself, from the snow and icing, and you know, yeah.
What kind of sounds would those be?
No, it's very high frequency sounds. very crystal sounds.
Wow, very interesting. Well, okay, now how about this? Who are the original inhabitants of Norway? The Vikings?
If you go very far back in time, I think there's some new knowledge. It was the Sami people who lived here and occupied the whole of Norway.
And
that's about 10,000 years ago.
And how do you spell that?
Sami people.
S-A-M-I, Sami?
Yeah.
I've never heard of them.
You should check them out. They now live in northern Norway.
Okay.
Originally, they came from Russia, and then gradually, when the icing and it was more, they were living hunters from reindeers and such, and then there gradually came people from southern Europe, and the Sami people were forced to go to the north. So then we are very, the Norwegian are in the German race, and then in the Viking time, the Vikings were all over, or Scandinavia, you know.
Yes, were the Vikings, were they Germanic people too?
Yes. And a lot of people moved to Iceland as well. So if you want to meet the real Norwegians, old Norwegian race, you have to go to Iceland.
For real? So the people of Iceland today were originally from Norway. Really?
Yeah.
Very interesting. Well, now what about the people from Finland and Sweden? Are they totally different from the Norwegians, or are they they're Germanic?
Same heritage, Denmark, Sweden, and Finland.
Okay. Mm. So those four countries are they all four like quite similar?
Yeah, very very similar. The Finnish are some of the Finnish are related to Russian people.
Yes.
Of course, because they share the border.
Okay.
And they have a different language. We don't understand Finnish.
Okay.
In Sweden, Denmark, and Norway, we understand each other.
Okay.
And we don't understand Icelandic language, because that's the old Norwegian language, and we have forgotten that.
Well, I know in Iceland, I know a girl there. She's a singer, and she's from Iceland, but she lives in New Zealand. But she's actually in Iceland right now, and she told me that the way you determine someone's last name is okay. Her name is Hera, H-E-R-A, and her father's name is Hjörtur. So her last name becomes Hjörtur daughter. She's Hera, the daughter of Hjörtur. And so, do you do the same thing in Norway?
Almost. You always use son, like Svensson, Robertson, like that.
Yes, but your name, you don't have that.
Yeah, we don't use the female daughter. It's always from the father.
Okay. Very cool. Well, have you visited the Southern Hemisphere yet? Have you visited the Southern Australia, New Zealand?
No, I should like to do that.
You should come down here, man. New Zealand, parts of New Zealand look a lot like Fjordland.
Yeah, I know.
And also in Chile, there's an area that looks like that too. But in the southern hemisphere, the only land, like what latitude are you at now? Are you at like 50 something degrees north?
Yeah, I think it's around that, yeah.
Because to be at that latitude, the only place in the southern hemisphere you could be would be in South America.
Yeah. Mm.
Because there's no land. Tasmania doesn't go that far south. Mm. You might have to be on a subantarctic island.
Scandinavia is like northern parts of Canada and Alaska.
Yes.
Same.
Mm. Well,
it's cold in the winter and very warm in the summer. So.
Yes, I'm sure. Well, the time zone that I'm in right now, the only other place in the world in my time zone is in eastern Russia, like the Vladivostok over in there, because in New Zealand, we're like close to the international date line. But, well, now let me ask you this. Tell us about working with Steve Roach. He's a well-known, I guess, would you call him a synthesist or an electronic composer?
Yeah, both. He has been working with synthesizers since the 70s. And, so I met him in California, like it was 2005 or something, it turned out he had listened to my albums for many years. So, and we met and we had a lot in common. You know, same background, same view on how to do the artist career and all this, and I made two albums with him. So I visited him in Arizona, so we worked in the studio in his studio in southern Arizona.
Yes. Well, now there's another composer who's kind of in the same vein of music. His name's Michael Stearns.
Yeah.
And he did, I don't know all of his music, but one of my very favorite filmmakers is this guy named Ron Fricke. And he made Baraka, he made Koyaanisqatsi, and the soundtrack to Baraka, Michael Stearns did most of that. You know, there's other musicians on there like Lisa Gerrard from Dead Can Dance and people like that, but he basically did it, and I think that's some very, very, very powerful music. It was a great collaboration between him, you know. And if you could work on a film, a Ron Fricke film, would you do that?
Of course.
Well, do you know what he's, I wonder what he's working on now.
No, I don't know. But I met Michael Stearns last year in Belgium.
Okay.
On the festival. And so we are going to do an album together.
Ah, very cool.
That's awesome.
Will you record that?
It's in the progress.
Yes. Will you record that at your studio or there in California?
We exchange files and then we're gonna meet to mix it.
Okay.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and that's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, I'd like to hear that.
So he's one of the pioneers. He started even before Steve. I think he started in the early 70s.
Okay.
Because he's older also.
Yeah. Well, you might find this interesting. I'm originally from North Carolina in the USA. And in 1990, I was, let's see, is that what year it was? No, it must have been around in the early 1980s. Anyway, I got to meet a legendary electronic designer named Robert Moog, M-O-O-G, the guy who invented the synthesizer, because he was living way up in the mountains in North Carolina. And he had, I think he was working for Kurzweil. He was doing something when Ray Kurzweil was doing synthesizers and stuff. Robert Moog was involved with that. But that was, you know, but Steve Michael Stearns might have had, you know, one of those early Moog synthesizers, you know, like the big thing that Keith Emerson had. And I think the guys from Tangerine Dream probably used some of that.
Yeah. So you met him then? That's awesome.
I called him up and I went to his house and just talked to him for a couple hours. But, he wasn't making any music or anything, so it was not like I didn't really get to talk much shop with him or anything. But it was cool.
Mm-hmm. The company now is run by his daughter, I think. And they're doing well. It's a very special company profile. All the workers are co-owners of the company.
Really? Is it called Moog Music?
Yeah.
Really?
So they have... it started with a little... Because Moog was out of business for many years, and then they started up again with Moog Little Fatty, and then... Mm-hmm. That synth became a very bestseller, and then they have managed to start again, and now they're really healthy.
So are they selling hardware?
Hardware, or they have a couple of software synths for iPad, but basically hardware.
Yes. Well, guess what? I also, this company in California loaned me one of their synthesizers for a year when I was doing this stuff with the Dolphins. They were called Sequential Circuits. It was called a Prophet 5.
Yeah.
And I like that. I mean, that's back when the synthesizers had knobs that you could twirl. I like knobs and dials and stuff. I'm not a big fan of all the little buttons and stuff, you know. And that was a pretty good synth. I think Ralph Towner actually used one on one of his solo CDs. But
that's correct. Yes. I'm a big fan of Dave Smith. So his company now is releasing some really good synths. That's my favorite synths right now. I have them right here. I have three of his. Very expensive, but it's the best.
And who is that again?
That's Dave Smith, Sequential Circuits.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. Now, I also got to record on, in 1987, a friend of mine was working at a studio in San Francisco, and they had this brand new piece of technology called, I call it a synclavier. And so he had one in the studio, and he let me go in there. I recorded this multi-track thing just off the top of my head, but some of the sounds on it were really, really cool. But because it was brand new, he would not give me a mix down of my song except as a cassette, because he didn't want those samples to get out. But I remember the computer part of it was the size of a refrigerator. So this was in 1987. So now, you know, that same circuitry would probably be the size of a wristwatch or something like that. But you know, but that was I know another. Have you heard of a guitar player named Pat Metheny?
Sure.
Well, now I met him a few times, and whenever the first time I saw him perform live was at the Hollywood Bowl, and his album called Off Ramp had just come out. And that was the album where he used the synclavier for the first time. And the opening track, he had a sound that he created. It sounded like a cross between a trumpet and an elephant. And it was just really fucking freaky, man. And it was just like, I'm sure, I know he's still doing music, but I don't think he's doing anything experimental anymore.
No, it's more back to the traditional jazz guitar thing. Like, you know, he's a big Wes Montgomery fan, and his style now is very much into that, I think.
Yes. Well, now,
I love those early recordings with the Pat Metheny group are fabulous.
How about the White Album? The White Album.
I heard him live like 4 or 5 times.
Yeah, I saw him a few times.
He's a fantastic live performer.
Absolutely. I like their White Album, the Pat Metheny group.
And, yeah, they don't work together anymore.
Yeah. Now, Eberhard Weber, the bass player, was he Norwegian?
No, he's German.
Oh, German, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But he had some interesting sounds on the bass that he built.
Yeah.
Jimmy Page, remember Jimmy Page used to take the bow from a violin or a cello and use it on his Les Paul. So have you ever done something like that?
Yeah.
You have?
Yeah. I have an electric violin. I don't play violin, but sometimes I use the bow on the guitar.
Yes. Well, you know how the bridge on a stringed instrument like a violin or a cello, it's curved. So the strings are not in a straight line, they're in an arc. So I wonder if you could have a guitar built with the strings on an arced bridge like that, that would make it easier to bow.
Yeah, because it's the strings are on a flat curve on the guitar, and so it can be a little fiddly to play.
You can't just hit one string at a time. Well, now, how about this? Michael Stearns, I saw, I think it was a doco about the making of the soundtrack for Baraka, and it showed this giant instrument that he built, and I'm not sure if he invented it or not, but it's called the beam. You know, that thing is that aluminium block about 6 or 8 meters long with all these piano strings on there. Now, did you get to see that in person?
No, I haven't. I haven't visited him yet. I hope to go he lives in Santa Fe.
Oh, does he?
I hope to visit him someday.
Yes. Have you been to Santa Fe?
No.
I've lived there before.
Oh, really?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a beautiful, freaky place, and it's high up. It's at 7,000 feet. You know, a mile and a half high, so you have to get elevation acclimatized when you go there. But the part that makes it weird is that only 30 miles away is Los Alamos National Laboratory, which is the weapons lab where they designed and built the first atomic bombs. And it's still one of the major weapons development places, and most of the scientists from Los Alamos live in Santa Fe. And the locals in Santa Fe call them cones, like coneheads. But it's got some creepy vibes there, man. The energy of northern New Mexico is really inspiring and very beautiful. The desert and the light, the colors and everything. But there's a lot of interesting people live in Santa Fe. It's been a long time. I mean, I haven't even been to the continental United States in almost 20 years. You know, so
are you originally from the U.S.?
Yes, originally, yeah. But I've been living in Australia and New Zealand since the year 2000.
Mm-hmm. So where in U.S. are you from?
Well, I grew up in North Carolina on the East Coast. That's where Robert Moog was living when I visited him. But I was based in Colorado all through the 90s in Boulder, Colorado, and I spent a lot of time in Santa Fe and Taos up there. And so, you know, when you go to Santa Fe, hopefully you can take some time and do some traveling north, like go up into southern Colorado and over to the Four Corners area and go over to the Grand Canyon and Bryce and Zion. I mean, if you love the beauty of nature and stuff, you'll be close to some areas that there's nothing like that on the planet except for there. And that might inspire. You'll come up with some cool music.
It's very exotic for a Norwegian to go there, you know.
Yes.
it's so different. I've been many times in Arizona. I really love it, you know, the desert.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Did you go to the Grand Canyon?
Yeah.
Did you hike down in it?
Partly. It was a small road down there.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, you have to. You've got to go to that area in the winter.
And it's a lot of snow in the winter in Santa Fe, isn't it?
Absolutely, and even more in Colorado. I hitchhiked all through that area, all seasons of the year, and I was hitchhiking in Colorado once. It was February, and the snow, they just plowed the road, and the snow was about a meter deeper than the height of the stop sign. So it was about probably the snow, about 4 meters of snow was on the ground that they plowed through so that people could drive.
Oh, yeah.
And that was normal. But, well, look, we've only got about 5 minutes left, but so if you could record, if you could play music with anybody on this planet now for fun, who would it be? Or who would you like to work with? Like, you've got Steve Roach lined up. He's a pretty legendary. Is it possible? Would you have a jam with David Gilmour if he would do it?
I was thinking of him when you asked me. Yeah.
Do you?
Because I would go for. He's completely different from me. But his sound on the guitar, to do a duo with him would be like...
Well, you know what I can hear already? You know what I can hear? I can hear you setting up some pulsing background kind of ambient space, kind of an ambient, a fluid, a continuum, and then let him cut loose with some of his electric lead on top of that. That would be really, really cool. That would be really cool. But then, and guess who you can get to produce it? Alan Parsons.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He could mix it.
Yep. Now, I don't know what he's doing now, but I listened to some of the music that he was involved with, like, of course, Dark Side of the Moon. And
yeah.
But did you ever hear of a band called Ambrosia? Ambrosia. He engineered their first album. It was from 1976. But they did it. They had a song called "Holding On to Yesterday." You probably recognize it. But that album is actually really, really good. And I thought they were British, but they were actually from L.A. And then they went on to do several more. And apparently, they're actually touring now with a female keyboard player. But how about this? Did you like Miles Davis?
Miles Davis, of course. I heard him live once.
Yep.
In Norway in 1984.
Okay.
That was when he returned from he had some health problems, so he hadn't been playing for 10 years.
Ah.
And then he suddenly came back.
Yep.
And it was. Legendary.
Well, I mean, he
concert here in Norway. It was. I can't really explain it, but he's someone like him.
He's like a musical. He's a musical spirit. He was a spirit.
Some people have seen like John Coltrane on stage. It's same thing.
Well, Coltrane, I only started listening to his music recently, but there's something about it. But I think these people, especially Miles Davis, his music wasn't even about his playing. It was about what everybody else was doing. He could just be standing there, and then they'd be just like playing the hottest music they've ever played in their life, because they were doing it with Miles, and he might play a few notes on the trumpet here and there, but it was just he was like a catalyst that could bring out these amazing performances with people.
Yeah. And the way he's thinking on music is you can learn so much about him. Especially, there are a lot of interviews with Miles on YouTube. You should check it out because it's so down to earth, and he has a lot of wisdom when it comes to perform, compose, all those things.
Yes. Well, maybe you can send me a couple of links to what you think a couple of those good ones are.
Yeah.
Well, and so John McLaughlin, did you ever meet him?
No. He's one of my heroes from the 70s. So I still listen to Mahavishnu Orchestra, of course. It's like Birds of Fire and all those things.
Yes. Well, you know what?
It's part of my heritage.
Yes. Well, my favorite music of his was his recordings with the people from India. He called it Shakti with Zakir Hussain. But that's.
Shakti was my introduction to Indian music. Music from India.
I love Indian music.
I started to study India music from India, and I've been playing with some Norwegian musicians that immigrated from India and they live here in Norway. So I had the chance to. So we tried to recreate some of the Shakti things. There's not a recording of it, but that was the early 80s.
Man, I would love to hear that. I actually, I was in Pasadena in 1990, and my friend who I was visiting was part of the Ravi Shankar Music Circle, and it was Ravi Shankar's 70th birthday, so they had this concert, and I didn't get to shake his hand, but he was standing right beside me, and I also got to meet Zakir Hussain and El Subramaniam, the violin player, and another tabla player named Swapan Chaudhry, and several other people, but these are like some of the best musicians on the planet. And that Shakti is just so intense and just purely acoustic. And if you could sort of create an acoustic electronic hybrid, like were you working with a tabla player?
Yes. I've been. And I have been working with have you heard about the violinist called El Subramaniam?
Yeah, he's the violin player that I met him that day.
Really?
Yeah,
I have been working with him. I played in his group. He had a concert at the festival in Norway. So I was the guitarist in his group here in Norway.
And so, but where does he live? Is he living in the USA now?
Yeah, LA. So he's playing on a couple of tracks on a couple of my albums. So I visited. He visited my studio.
I only met him once. He probably wouldn't remember me, but the guy, there was this guy named Carl Malone. Carl Malone he was part of the Ravi Shankar Music Circle there in Pasadena, and he was this electronics guy. He worked at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory on space probes, like the Viking thing that they sent out and stuff. He worked on that, and then I met him, and he also built. He built a digital reverb unit before they existed. And so I did a recording with him, and then I went to the Ravi Shankar's birthday festival, and he actually recorded it. So actually, he had a whole archive of recordings exists of all these recordings that these Indian musicians played in Pasadena as part of the Ravi Shankar Music Circle, but they never released any of it. So it's all there somehow.
You are listening to UCY.TV. Why don't you stick around?